Blog Talk Radio.
From two beautifully scenic and historic locations, the Hudson Valley, New York, and Willow, Alaska, this is the Side Vibe, brought to you by Dog Works Radio. Your hosts are author, journalist, and photographer, the Five Sides mom, Dorothy Wills Raftery, and Dog Works Radio executive producer, canine behaviorist, trainer, and lead musher of Team Aneke, Robert Forto. The Side Vibe is all about the magnificent breed of the Siberian Husky. From training to grooming, and for those who show and breed, from parenting to playing and rescuing huskies in need, whether mushing over snow-covered trails or lounging on tropical shores, even for Hollywood sides on the big silver screen and so very much more. If it's about a Siberian Husky, we'll chat about it here.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, hosting from Willow, Alaska, and on the line, calling in from New York, Dorothy Wills Raftery. Dorothy, how's it going?
It's going well, Robert. It's going well.
Great. How is the weather out your way?
Well, you know, I think we have your weather happening here. We just got another surprise snowstorm that left us with about 3 inches today. So this is like our fourth one in a row. So we're sitting under probably approximately 4 to 5 feet of snow.
Wow, that is like what we have up here.
Yeah, we haven't had a good New York winter like this in quite a long time. So a lot of people are kind of upset, and I'm like, oh, I remember these from my childhood. I mean, this is what New York weather is supposed to be like in the winter. We just were kind of spoiled for a little bit. But needless to say, the dogs are loving it. The Huskies, just they're thrilled.
I'm sure they are. And, you know, today, since there is snow in both locations here, we're going to talk about sled dogs. Is that right?
Yes. Our guest today is going to be Brad Johnson from the Northern Lights Sled Dog Rescue. You know, of course, this is also the Iditarod season, so we'll be chatting about that as well. So it's a good snowy day to be talking about sled dogs and huskies.
Looking forward to it. So tell us a little bit about Brad.
Okay, before I jump in and talk about Brad, I just want to mention that today, February 23rd, is a special date. It marks my fourth blogiversary. It was actually 4 years ago today, Robert, that I began writing the Five Sides blog over at fivesides.blogspot.com. And I had kicked it off then. My very first post was about canine dental health, because as everybody is aware, February is Dental Health Month. And I just want to say I've made so many friends over the past 4 years, yourself included, and I look forward to many, many more years of blogging and sharing the lives of my five sides, Harley, Gibson, Wolf, Chloe, and Bandit, along with our adopted feral kitty, Binks, you know, and sharing news, videos, and all things Siberian Husky and canine.
Well, congratulations. 4 years is a big milestone. It takes a lot of effort to get out there and write every day, doesn't it?
You know, I wish I could say yes, I guess, but no, actually it's not. It's my passion. I love writing. So what I think I find more challenging is because, as you know, I'm working on a book about epi dogs, and I have the Five Sides Tales. I've got two of them. I'm working on with my illustrator, as well as a book I just put out for Buddy the Christmas Husky. And, you know, Brad and I are discussing an upcoming book at some point. So for me with the blog, and that it's finding enough time to do it all because I love
right.
it and I want to do it all.
Right.
So, Robert, February has been a very busy month up there in Alaska with the racing in preparation to the Iditarod. And I know your daughter, Nicole, she's getting to race in the junior Iditarod. And weather's been playing a big role again this year. I see the restart's going to stay in your hometown of Willow. So can you tell us a little bit about how things are going there?
You know, just like every year, Mother Nature slaps us in the face with weather, whether it's a lot of snow or no snow at all. It's been interesting, as you mentioned at the top. We haven't had a whole lot of snow since, I don't know, the first or second week of January. And just last night, we got 4 or 5 inches here in Willow. So we do have about 4 or 5 feet on the ground. But, you know, training has been interesting for a lot of mushers, including the Iditarod mushers as well. So it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks in the mushing world.
Right, because I think, you know, some people may or may not know is that, you know, up there, warmer weather, I mean, it's cold by our means, but it's not good for the dogs to be running in that type of weather, right?
Right. We like to run our dogs anywhere from 10 above to 10 below. That's where we find our optimum performance in at least our team of dogs. But, yeah, running in 30-degree weather with a team of sled dogs, that's like running around in New York City in a parka in the middle of summer.
Mm. Well, I certainly hope you guys get the cold weather, and I hope safe runnings and lots of luck to Nicole and the Junior Iditarod and to all the mushers.
Well, thank you.
On today's show, we're chatting with Brad Johnson, who's been involved with the Siberian Husky breed for nearly 40 years, obtaining his first Siberian in 1975. Over the years, he's participated in a full spectrum of activities, including the show ring, competing in obedience trials, and training and running his own pleasure team. A longtime student of the breed from a historical perspective, he's now very heavily engaged in a northern breed sled dog rescue with Indiana's Northern Light Sled Dog Rescue, and that's a 501c3 not-for-profit rescue organization, and they're celebrating their 10 years in existence, having placed over 1,500 northern breed dogs in forever homes. I mean, that's really commendable. He spends as much time as he can manage in helping find wonderful and loving forever homes for these unfortunate members of those breeds who may have been abandoned or abused in the past. And with Northern Lights, Brad assists with evaluating the physical condition and personality of the individual dogs. He conducts home visits, arranges veterinary care, and he oversees their Facebook presence and coordinates a lot of their fundraising projects, which he says is the lifeblood of a rescue. Brad, I'd like to welcome you to the Sci-Fi.
I'm really happy to be here. It's great to talk to you and Robert.
Thank you.
We do a lot of chatting on Facebook, so it's actually kind of fun to be really doing it over the phone.
That's right. It is.
Now, Brad,
listen to you having 4 feet of snow. We probably have a foot on the ground, but it was pretty warm today. It was in the 40s, and it's supposed to be in the 50s tomorrow, so we're losing some of ours.
Oh, you're losing it. Yeah, no, we're supposed to go a little bit warmer tomorrow, but I think we're going to hang on to it for a little bit, you know, which right now the temperature's nice. We're hanging right around 30, so it's kind of perfect to be out there in it.
Right.
Brad, I want to first talk to you about your love of Siberian Huskies and the northern breed, and can you, like, tell us how did you first become interested in them?
Well, actually, when I was really young, I mean like grade school age, we had a neighbor who had two Siberian Huskies, and I used to go over there literally on a daily basis. I just loved those dogs. They were just wonderful. Everything about their personality, of course, they're strikingly beautiful and the whole nine yards. And that's how I first got interested in them. And from that time on, I was like, well, I'd really like to have one of those someday. And eventually I got one, and then I had a little few more than one.
What they call it, the potato chip syndrome?
That's exactly right.
Now, you also mentioned you were a longtime student of the breed from a historical aspect, and that piqued my curiosity. Can you elaborate a little bit on that and tell us just what exactly does that mean?
Well, I was a history major in college. I'm into history in a lot of different aspects, but of course with the Siberian Huskies, there were such intriguing things that took place with them when they first came over from Siberia in the early 1900s. And, you know, some of the big names, and, of course, the Serum Run in 1925 up in Alaska. There are just so many interesting things that have taken place with the breed. And then learning how a lot of their characteristics and traits came about genetically and from their environment and that kind of thing. It was just always very interesting to me, and I'm an avid reader, so everything I could get my hands on to find out more about the breed, I read.
Now, you also had mentioned that you did lots of obedience trials, which I imagine the northern breeds would love to be involved in, being that, you know, being active is in their genetics. But being a Husky parent, and I have to ask, how difficult is it to work with a Siberian off-leash during obedience trials? Because I could just see one of mine, my Bandit, she would spot a squirrel or anything, and that's it. She'd be off and running, and there we go, the obedience part.
Well,
plus, you know, I'd be worried about recall. So tell me about your experiences with this, and how easy or difficult is it to train these breeds for obedience?
Well, that's kind of a two-sided sword. As far as how difficult it is to train them, it's actually very easy to train a Siberian Husky. They're one of the most intelligent breeds on the planet. They learn very, very quickly. So you can teach them anything. the other side of that coin is they're also pretty independent and for thousands of years have been bred to be independent thinkers and make decisions on their own. So even though you can train them to do anything, when you say, you know, Nix, one of my dogs, come, or front, or heel, or anything like that, she'll stop and think about it and go, well, we'll see, what's in it for me? Is there anything more fun that I could do? You know, is there any real reason for me to do this? So you can train them to do anything, but how reliable they're going to be at obeying those commands is always going to be a question mark. That's why, like in rescue, we stress so hard, never let your dog off leash when you're out walking and stuff like that. If you're not in a confined area, always have to be on leash because the Huskies have that love of wandering, and they may or may not return on a recall. In obedience competition, at least you're normally in a relatively enclosed area, and most Huskies will know, well, there's not really anything I can do to get away, so if he calls me, I guess I'll come.
It's funny you say that, because, I mean, as Husky parents out there, I'm sure are all nodding their head, because I know with mine, you can see them thinking. I mean, and people who we know that don't have Huskies don't understand when I say, oh, no, she thinks too much. And they're like, what do you mean she thinks too much? I'm like, you have to watch her, because she really does. You can see her sitting there thinking. And and this is Harley. She's our alpha girl. And they all think, but she's the real thinker in the pack. And, you know, you have to figure out how to get her to do things different, because you have to think about her thinking about what you're thinking about.
And one of the things that I always also stress, and again, this is from the behavior standpoint of being around the breed so long, Huskies in particular, maybe more than most breeds even, almost every breed has this characteristic, but Huskies maybe a little more so, it's positive reinforcement. The way to get them to do something in obedience or to obey a command and that type of thing is to make it worth their while. That, you know, like I said, it's what's in it for me is kind of in their head. And if they know it's going to make you happy and it's a good thing or there's going to be a reward or something like that, positive reinforcement is so important with the breed in training them in that type of thing.
That's good to know. I mean, I totally agree. I know I have to do that, you know, with ours, and they are very much about the treats. I think you can almost get them to do anything when you pull out the treats.
That's right.
Now, one of my girls is deaf, and that's Bandit. She's our one who, we always said she'd be great on the sled. However, her attention span is very short. She sees a squirrel, that's it. You know, the sled, everything's going wherever she decides to go. Now, I've started working with her and a trainer using sign language, and we actually are on a bit of a respite because, as you know, that I'm rehabbing her older brother Gibson right now from an injury in December, but she's really good with some of the signs I've already taught her. My goal is to actually bring her through classes and eventually have her become a therapy dog, because she's one who truly would love to have a job, you know, and I know other people have talked about this, and you know, with a Husky, it's especially important that they feel like they have something that they have to do, like a job to do. And I'm curious, have you ever worked with deaf Huskies or Mals before? And if so, you know, how different or difficult is training them for obedience? Recall, but recall in an enclosed area. How's that?
Well, like you say, they are the definition of a working breed, and the best thing in the world for a Siberian Husky is to give them a task or a job. One of the things that I recommend to people all the time, get your dog a backpack. You put a backpack on. We do it with our dogs. We just put a water bottle on each side of the backpack. They're kind of like saddlebags when we go for walks and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And they just love those backpacks because to them that's a job. They're doing work, and that's what they were bred to do. With regards to a deaf dog, I've never owned one. I've been around them a few times. And what I've found is that most of them tend to, you know, I think like human beings. If one of their senses is deficient in some way, like they're deaf or, you know, whatever the case may be, or a blind dog's, I've been around a few dogs that have been blind, they adjust. Their other senses become more acute and they become capable of picking up. Your dog maybe can't hear as well. Chances are her sense of smell or eyesight and those types of things have developed to the point where they're actually compensating a little bit for that, and that's why the sign language, and maybe they pay a little more attention to you or whatever the case may be, or sometimes not. But I think, you know, like I said, I've never owned one, but dogs that I've been around that have had some type of physical handicap like blindness or deafness or something like that, in general, the other senses pick up the slack a little bit, and they become more acutely aware, whether it be through vision or smell or just paying more attention or whatever, and that's how they usually make up for it.
No, you're so right, because with Bandit, her sense of smell is outstanding. You know, when we take them outside, even before we get out the door, she already knows that something's been out in that yard, and she will hit the deck at a full-fledged run, and we're like, well, what's going on? You know, we're all looking around like, what's happening? And she's already down off the deck and at the fence, and sure enough, there's either a cat, a squirrel, or, you know, a possum that has the misfortune of crossing the yard. She's extremely fast, but she is very, very much in tune. So, yes, you're correct. She does have a very keen sense of smell. Same thing in the snow. With all the feet of snow that we've had, she's been doing a lot of, you know, like side snow plowing. And she actually found a broomstick handle, and it was buried way deep down. Obviously, it was down on, you know, the lawn. And there she is, and she found it. And I went over, and I'm like, how did you even know this was under there? You know, it was just, it's amazing to me. Robert, I have to ask you to jump in because you're a behavior center trainer as well and work with Huskies. Any experience with dogs that have a handicap such as being deaf?
You know, I trained a dog one time with a dog that was not only blind but had both of his eyes removed due to a disease. That was probably the most interesting dog I've ever trained, but I've never had the chance to train a deaf or blind husky. I think that would be quite interesting. As Brad mentioned, they are quite independent, and I can only imagine how independent they would be if they couldn't hear you.
Yeah,
I was going to say, some of mine pretend that they're deaf all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah, mine do that too. There's actually something, I think it might have come from your Facebook page about Huskies, husky deafness. I'm not sure if that was you, but it was, they had a little one of those, you know, where they put the caption over the photo, and it was basically saying, like, you know, yeah, I turn it on when I want to turn it on kind of thing.
That's right.
Our Harley's very much like that. Our queen, she'll play deaf, or, you know, it's all about what she wants. Britt, how many dogs do you personally have now? And, you know, can you tell us a little bit about them and their age? And
well, right now we just have two. We unfortunately lost one this past July. She passed away from cancer. And so we just have two dogs right now. Perseus, he's our senior guy. He is a wonderful dog, but he's a little older. Both of ours are rescue dogs, so I can't tell you their exact age. We would guess Perseus is probably 9-ish or so. And he unfortunately tore a CCL just a few months ago, and he's been rehabbing that and doing great, by the way. He gets around pretty good now. I think he's got a little arthritis, which I think actually bothers him more than his CCL injury does.
Right. But, I know sometimes we swap videos, and it's so impressive to see just how great he's doing. And Robert, this is another, like, because Robert and I have talked about getting on and actually doing an episode on CCL injuries because they are becoming so prevalent now. We hear so much more about them. But Perseus, I see, is doing quite well.
Yeah, awesome. And we went with a conservative route because of his age. We were, you know, wanted to try that first. We talked to our vet, and she said, certainly very, very much worth a try, because even if it doesn't really get the results that you're hoping for, it won't do any harm, and in fact, it will build the muscles and stuff up and the tendons around the ligament, so that if you do end up having surgery, it'll probably reduce his recovery time and that kind of thing. So we went the conservative route, and it worked great because we were just trying to avoid the surgery because of his age and that type of thing.
Right, right, yeah. I'm a big advocate of conservative care. And, you know, of course it always does have its place because I've had two dogs that had surgery, and I have two dogs in conservative care. But, you know, two of the cases were emergencies, so we couldn't do it. But,
right.
You know, Harley's, kind of in the same boat as Perseus because she's older. She's going to be 9 in March. And, you know, she has a rotating tear. So she has no problem running. She actually got – I've been leash walking her, but she did get out the other day with all the snow, and she slipped out while I was taking Gib out. I kind of call him my Siberian husky suitcase because I have him all geared up in a sling harness to kind of carry his back end out. And she did get out, which made me a little nervous because she was doing some calisthenics around that backyard and diving in the snow, all with her brace on, and I'm sitting there. And, of course, with her, I can't yell for her to come back because she'll amp it up. So I have to ignore her. And meanwhile, I can see her from the corner of my eye just running circles around me and Gib and the other dogs, and I just kind of held my breath. And when I got her back in, I readjusted her brace. I gave her some, anti-inflammatory supplements that I use and some bed rest. And she was sore, but thank God, you know, she didn't. And I do attribute it to because she did have the brace on to help support that. But yes, it was a little bit of a scary moment. But she's kind of in the same boat as Perseus because she is older. Arthritis has set in there, so sometimes her limping can be from the arthritis. But I do try, like, she's back in the brace right now because of all the snow we've had. I kind of give it to her for some extra support. But I am very happy when I see Perseus's videos and see how well he's doing. Now, you have a second husky. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say I like to share those with you because I'm always so happy to see him out chasing his sister Nyx around.
Yep. And I was going to say, you have a second dog. And they're both Siberian Huskies, is that right?
Right. Actually, Perseus is a Siberian Husky mix. He is, and we did the DNA testing just for fun. No surprises. He is 3/4 Siberian Husky and 1/4 Shiba Inu.
Oh, okay.
So, and the Nyx, like I say, they're not related, but we call them brother and sister. She is a Siberian Husky, a purebred Siberian Husky, and she is, we would estimate, about 3 years old. She's just a young adult, and she's full of vim and vigor and loves to go out and chase around in the backyard. But she's really good with Perseus. She doesn't push him too hard to try and get him to overdo it and that kind of thing. And she's our hunter. She could spend 24 hours a day watching the various critters, squirrels and birds and everything else in our backyard, and that's her whole goal in life, is to chase those. But
they're both beautiful.
Yeah, she's a gray and white, and she's what we would kind of call a throwback. Her build is more, I did show dogs in confirmation and that type of thing, and there's, in my opinion, kind of more of a show type Siberian Husky. There's some dogs, you know, a lot of the dogs in the breed have been kind of bred to get a little bit different build and a little bit different look. And Nyx is more of the throwback. She's more of a pure sled dog appearing Husky, which is, that's what's near and dear to my heart are the dogs that look like they can work well in harness. She's a little leggier, a little longer, a little finer boned, and we just love her. She's gray and white, and yeah, like you say, and I may be a little biased, but I think she's beautiful.
I think both of them are, actually. Well, I should say she's beautiful and he's handsome.
There we go.
Now, how did your affiliation with Northern Lights Sled Dog Rescue begin? And I know you wear many hats there, so can you kind of tell us about, you know, your roles there?
Well, we got involved with Northern Lights, actually. Aurora, the female Siberian that we lost here back in July, a couple of years ago, we were kind of looking for a companion for her, and Northern Light, we talked to people at Northern Lights, and Perseus is a Northern Lights alum, and that's how we ended up with him, and that's how we ended up getting connected to Northern Lights Sled Dog Rescue, and from there it just grew. It was like just awesome people in the rescue, and they were so wonderful, and just everything went so well, and Teresa and I just started doing a little bit here and a little bit there and then a little bit more and a little bit more, and now we're, you know, just submerged in it, and we love it. As
yeah,
far as roles, we both do kind of whatever we're asked to do. I because I have a lot of experience with the breed, like you mentioned in the intro, I got my first Siberian Husky almost 40 years ago, and I've been around the breed for all that time. I'm very, very familiar with their personality, their characteristics, their traits, their strengths, their weaknesses, their pros, their cons. And so I help some with the evaluation of dogs and when it comes to personality and physical evaluation. I make bedding runs taking dogs back and forth to the vet. I do home visits for to kind of discuss, you know, people who are interested in adopting, you know, what to expect and kind of manage expectations and that type of thing if they're going to adopt a northern breed dog. And but I'll do just about anything. I'm just a regular volunteer, but we do love it.
Now, for those who are tuning in, we're listening to the Side Vibe on Dog Works Radio, and my co-host Robert Fordo and I are chatting with Brad Johnson of the Northern Lights Sled Dog Rescue of Indiana, where they save Siberian Huskies and Malamutes in the Midwest and Great Lakes region of the United States. You can check out their Facebook page of the same name and also their website at www.northernlights.petfinder.com, or you can go to their Facebook page, click on About, and you can click on the hot link to their website from there so you can keep up to date on their beautiful adoptable northern breed dogs, events, adoption information, and breed information. Now, 2014 is a big year for Northern Lights, right, Brad? I mean, you're celebrating 10 years of saving Siberian Huskies and Malamutes, and I understand it's 1,500 and counting?
Yes, it is. And by the way, I heard in the intro also that you're going to be celebrating 4 years of doing your blog, which, of course, I read all the time. It's absolutely wonderful, so I'll congratulate you on that.
Well, thank you.
It is Northern Lights is celebrating 10 years as a rescue, and you know we just keep plugging along. It's 1,500 dogs. I think we're actually getting close to 1,600 dogs now because we've had several already adopted this year, so we're closing on 1,600, and we're hoping to do it another 10 years or 20 or 30.
Or 30, yeah. That is tremendous.
Yeah. I mean, with you, I wish they'd put us out of business. I wish there was no Siberian Husky or Malamute that needed to be adopted, that they all had perfect forever homes. You know, that's kind of the dream of all of us in rescue, is hoping that someday we won't be needed.
Right. But, you guys that are in rescue doing this and helping these dogs, I mean, it's so commendable. I really don't think a lot of people understand just all the work that goes on behind the scenes. So you guys really need to be commended for that because it's wonderful. And, you know, every day there are several postings of happy ending and new beginning stories on your Facebook page. You know, that's just terrific. And I do want to congratulate you on 10 years, and I'm with you. I hope it's another 10 years of success and saving lives. It'd be wonderful. They were, like you said, there were no more to find homes for. They were all in happy homes. Unfortunately, that's not the case. So we're lucky we have folks like you out there who are doing this. And you guys have any big celebratory type of events this year in honor of the decade of rescuing these dogs?
Well, I'm not in a position to announce anything. There's a couple things we've been talking about, maybe doing some little special things, but nothing in stone yet. So we're just basically celebrating by finding a forever home for another dog tomorrow and another one the next day, and that's a celebration for us.
Wonderful. Well, if you guys ever do, either or, I love to also share your happy stories, and if there is anything, I'm here to kind of help spread the word, so just let me know.
I certainly appreciate that.
Now, Brad, can you talk about how difficult or easy it is to place the rescue dogs in new homes? I mean, with all the wonderful success stories and happy and ending new beginning stories that you post each day on your Facebook page, you guys make it look easy. But I know it takes lots of hard work, love, and dedication on the other end. Can you tell us about some of the behind-the-scenes work that folks never see?
Well, there's so many things that take place. Even before a dog becomes available for adoption through Northern Lights, there's a lot of legwork that's done beforehand, and then there's the whole adoption process as far as an adoption application. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention Julie Walczak, who is the founder and president of Northern Lights Sled Dog Rescue. She's the one that started it all, and she is so heavily involved in so many aspects of the rescue, as far pretty much everything, actually. But she is in contact daily with animal shelters and humane societies and other organizations like that all over the Midwest when they have northern breed dogs that, they're looking, hoping that maybe a breed-specific rescue could take, because it opens up another spot for other breeds in the humane societies and whatever. So she's in contact with them constantly. And, of course, she's the one that's the pivot person for all fundraising and everything. And fundraising, as you know, is, there's no way for a rescue to survive without generous donors and people willing to donate and participate in activities or fundraisers and those kinds of things. And that's, you know, Julie oversees and takes care of all of that. And then another person, Dawn Mayer, she is the vice president of Northern Lights, been with Northern Lights from the very beginning, and she's the adoptions coordinator. We call her the matchmaker, and it's literally that. She's been doing this for years. She's the person that takes care of every application that comes in, and there's a lot of them that come in. And sometimes there's a situation where a person we think, you know, maybe a great person and a great dog owner, but maybe not the right person for a Siberian Husky or an Alaskan Malamute. Dawn is the one that goes through every single application, checks references, talks to the people's vets if they've had pets in the past or currently have pets. And she's the one that, she again, full-time job basically for her. She is involved with updates from the dogs. Like when I do an assessment or an evaluation of a dog, I feed the information to her. When I do a home visit, the information goes to her. She uses all of that with the sole objective of trying to put the perfect dog with the perfect, so that everybody's happy. The dog lives a happy life, and the people are thrilled to death with their dog, and she is so good at it, I cannot tell you.
Oh, that's commendable, and the goal is to make sure that these dogs are happy in the homes and that the families are happy and that it is a good match. And, you know, I know there's a lot of work that goes behind that, so, you know, definitely kudos to her as well. I mean, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Now, Northern Lights is based out of Indiana and covers quite a vast area, the Midwest and the Great Lakes region. Can you tell our listeners what states and how far do you cover?
Well, we've got dogs. The vast majority of them are in Indiana or surrounding states. We're kind of based in Indianapolis, but we have a lot of dogs in surrounding states like Kentucky, Ohio, Michigan, Illinois, you know, that kind of thing. But we have dogs that have been placed in North Carolina, in Florida, in Missouri. I mean, so it branches out some. Our primary focus and the majority of our placements come from Indiana or the surrounding states.
But now if there was someone from a different state who was interested in one of the dogs on your page, they could most certainly go ahead and apply for one. They wouldn't be ruled out just because they weren't in the state.
That's correct. A lot of times, like I said, they wouldn't be ruled out. It would just be a question of whether the logistics could be worked out, whether they're willing to travel. I mean, we just had an adoption here maybe a month or so ago. It was actually a previous adopter who had since moved to Florida. They drove from Florida to Indianapolis to pick up the dog and then drove back. I mean, it can logistically be kind of a challenge, but it can be done.
Right, and we do know that there's some great pet transports that are available out there, too. And I know
yes.
you and I, we there's a lot of different resources that folks can find out about or ask about to share. Now, are you guys, are you foster home-based, or do you have a facility for dogs to reside in while they're waiting to be adopted?
Well, we're kind of a combination. We do not have a physical building of our own, but we do have, some of our dogs are in foster homes. We have a network of foster parents who have one, two, sometimes more than that dogs at any given time. But we also have a boarding kennel that people that we've known for a very, very long time and do an absolutely great job of boarding for us. And I will point out that it's paid boarding. It's not furry or anything like that. We pay for a daily boarding fee for every dog that we have there. And at any given time, it's maybe half and half of the dogs are in the boarding kennel or in a foster home.
Now, I know on your website page you have a listing of adoptable dogs and their photos and a little bit about them. How many Huskies and Mals do you currently have up for adoption?
I think it varies. It changes really from day to day as new dogs come in or as dogs are adopted and stuff. I would say the average is probably in the range of 20 to 25. It may go up closer to 30 at times. And if we have a real flash of a lot of adoptions that go out all at once, it sometimes will drop below 20. But the average is probably 20 to 25.
Now, can you walk us through your adoption process?
Well, sure. It's the very first thing is, and as you mentioned earlier, We do have a Facebook page, but the Facebook page, we don't do any adoptions or anything like that via Facebook. The Facebook page is really what we consider kind of a family site. It's we have so many previous adopters with over 1,500 adoptions over those years, and friends and volunteers and, you know, people who just like to breed or follow us and that kind of thing. The Facebook page is kind of a place where they can go and see what's going on, if we've got activities happening. Every dog that gets adopted, we do what's called an adoption notice, which is basically an announcement saying this dog has been, you know, now has a forever home. That's a big celebratory thing where, you know, previous adopters or volunteers and stuff like that get on, and it's always a happy, cheerful party time that somebody got a forever home. So that kind of thing, and breed information or information about the dogs. Then, of course, there's our actual website, and that's where it all really happens. It's www.northernlights.petfinder.com. You can go there. That gives you information on how to adopt, you know, what the process is, how to make a donation. If you're interested in volunteering, you can get information, you know, via the website. And so the website's kind of the focal point of the rescue, and the Facebook page is kind of our family celebration page. But the process is, if you're interested in a dog, stop by the website, look at the dogs. If there's one in particular you're interested in, get an adoption application from the adoptions coordinator. It's quite a lengthy application, but there's, you know, a lot of information that we really need to make sure that we can place the right dog in the home, and assuming it's a, you know, northern breed is a good match, you send the application into the adoptions coordinator. She reviews it to see if it looks like it's a good possibility. If so, then she proceeds, and there's, you know, checks references and checks with a veterinarian if you've had dogs in the past or if you have other dogs and those kinds of things. That information is all included on the application. And if she thinks there's a good possibility, then she'll contact one of the volunteers and schedule a home visit. We do a home visit for every one of our adoptions. We don't do any adoptions, you know, like on the spot adoptions, like if you're having an event at some area, you can't adopt a dog, just walk in and say, "I'd like to adopt that dog," and it's done. We have, you know, we have a process that we go through, and we stick very, very closely to that. But a home visit is scheduled, and if everything goes well with the home visit, that all the information is funneled to the adoptions coordinator, our matchmaker, Dawn, and she says, "Okay, you know, here's a dog you're interested in. This dog may not be the best for you because of this or this. Maybe you've got cats and the dog's not cat friendly, or, you know, whatever the case may be. But this other dog that you mentioned that you were interested in, we think would be an ideal match for you." And then she's going to schedule what's called a meet and greet. Basically, the people, the whole family, husband, wife, children, if they're involved, if they're other dogs, the other dog, there's this schedule where they come and would meet the dog that they're interested in adopting. Sometimes it's more than one. Usually one dog's kind of the focus, to see how the dog gets along, see how the dog gets along with the people and the family and the other dogs, if there's one of those involved and that kind of thing. And then it's a situation where if everything looks good, the dog goes home. And, you know, there's a brief period of time, adjustment period, where we want to make sure that everything goes well. No dog goes without us guaranteeing and saying, "Look, if this doesn't work out," as a matter of fact, it's part of the adoption contract. If things don't work out, you'll bring the dog back to us. We don't want to have the dog, you know, end up back in a shelter or something like that.
Right.
So and then once everything's going well, and that's the other thing that Dawn does, she follows it up from step one all the way well beyond the adoption. That's one of the things that we really pride ourselves on. Everybody, Julie, Dawn, myself, the other volunteers, it's a family. And so these 1,500 dogs are like 1,500 children to us.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And when they go, when they're adopted somewhere, we love to see pictures of them. That's part of the reason for the Facebook page. We love to hear updates. We get emails all the time from adopters saying, you know, this dog or that dog is getting along great, and pictures of them playing in the snow or with their new brother or sister dogs or the kids or whatever the case may be. So Dawn stays with that all the way through, and if there's ever any questions, if anybody has any problems, we're there to kind of coach them through it and say, well, here, you can try this or you can try that. If the, you know, if the dogs become a little bit destructive or, you know, anything, any problems arise, we're there beyond the adoption. And that's one of the things that Dawn, the adoptions coordinator, is always very, very involved with and really, really stays on top of what's going on. And that's pretty much it's a pretty basic process, but it can be kind of involved.
And, you know, that's great, too, because it's comforting also, I think, to the adoptive parents. I mean, while it's great for the dog and it's always about the dog, it's also great, too, because sometimes, you know, with a family, if they haven't had Sibes before, it's nice to have that support there and have someone there to help you through it and kind of be there to help give pointers and to make sure that fit works. Now, I have to ask you, since you do adopt out of state, what happens with the home visits with dogs that, say, want to be out of state? Do these people have to come in and meet you, or do you have extended family that's in these areas that does those type of things?
Sometimes. It kind of depends on the situation. Everyone's different. It kind of depends on where they're at. Now, mm-hmm. in a case of sometimes the people that are adopting a dog from out of state are previous adopters. And once you've been an adopter and you've been successful and the dog's gotten along well and we know you and we know, all those kinds of things, then a home visit is not required. For somebody, like if I wanted to adopt a dog from Northern Lights, they wouldn't say, well, we need to come and do a home visit. I've already adopted a couple of dogs from Northern Lights. So a lot of the times when they're out of state, it's that way. The other way is sometimes we have some other rescues who we're very good friends with. Rescues is a relatively small world. And so if we had a dog in another state or something like that and we were, close friends with people and knew the processes and procedures for another rescue, we might ask them, could you do a home visit for us? And I personally have done home visits for other rescues here in the Indianapolis area.
Wow, that's great. I mean, you guys really go, the whole nine yards to ensure the safety and the well match of the dog with the family, and that's really critical and that's important. And I think that's great for people to understand. You know, it's not just, oh, I want that dog, and you get that dog. I mean, the application process, you know, some people have commented over the years and about various rescues, you know, why do they have to have such a large application? Why is it so extensive? Why so many questions? This is why, to be sure that it is a good fit so that the dog does not wind up, back in a rescue or worse.
That's always our big objective when, we want to feed Dawn as much information as possible. Typically, by the time we get to a home visit, we're pretty sure that the people are going to be, a good chance at being an adopter and that type of thing. And one of the things I'm looking at the home visit is kind of what the environment's like, what the people are like, what their lifestyle is like. And that's all to feed Dawn the information so that she can be as armed as possible to make that perfect match. And like I said, that is so important. It is so wonderful to say, man, you get an email from an adopter a month after they adopt the dog saying, I can't believe it. This is like the absolute perfect dog for us. We could not possibly be happier. And they send pictures, and the dog's obviously just happy as can be. That's what it's all about for us, and that's what we're always trying to do.
That's wonderful. Now, for listeners who are tuning in, this is the Side Vibe on Dog Works Radio, and my co-host Robert Fordo and I are chatting today with Brad Johnson of the Northern Lights Sled Dog Rescue out of Indiana, where they save Siberian Huskies and Malamutes in the Midwest and Great Lakes region of the United States. You can check out their Facebook page of the same name and also their website at www.northernlights.petfinder.com, or go to their Facebook page, click on About, and you can click on the hot link to their website from there so you can keep up to date on all their beautiful adoptable northern breed dogs events, adoption information, and breed information. I'll also have link information on this over on fivesibes.blogspot.com on our Facebook page, The Five Sibes, and also on Dog Works Radio under the Sibes Live Radio Show. Now, We can see how these breeds love to run, and we know since the Iditarod is upon us, and there's some folks who are thinking running a sled dog team. We've all heard it. There are people who do think it's cruel to the dogs. Can you talk about that and put some of their minds at ease and attest to how these dogs love to run? And, Robert, I'm going to ask you to jump in a minute, too, also on this.
All right.
Absolutely. Like I said, I've run a pleasure team and trained and run a pleasure team of my own. I don't have enough dogs, and dogs are really capable of doing it. But I can attest, these dogs love to run and pull and harness, in my opinion. And Robert's currently a musher and certainly very, very involved. I'll ask him if my opinion is right. But everything I've seen, and again, this kind of goes back to the history, these dogs have been purebred to do this for thousands, literally thousands of years. They enjoy it, and it's as instinctive to them as it is for a sheepdog to herd sheep or a pointer to point game. To them, feeling that pull of that harness, harnesses are designed to distribute the pressure and the weight and that kind of thing. When you see a dog in a harness and they put their weight into it and pull into it, the dog's whole face lights up. To them, it's absolute pleasure. In my opinion, and in my experience has been, being cruel to a sled dog is leaving them behind when the team pulls out. And that's what I'll say, and I'll ask Robert from there, you know, if he sees it kind of the same way.
I totally agree, Brad. You know, we have 36 dogs down in our kennel, and every one of them can be sound asleep. If we go down there and grab a batch of harnesses, every one of them is jumping up and down and barking and circling on their chains and just going absolutely crazy. Pick me, pick me, pick me. I want to run today. And, of course, we don't run every dog every day, but there's just that delight in their faces and their desire to want to go. You know, a lot of people see all of the negative publicity that they get on Iditarod and other races, mainly because the media reports only the negative. They don't see the hours upon hours of spending with these dogs down the trail and all the love and compassion that we give to them and all the care that is given to the dogs, not only by the mushers, but the folks that are at the checkpoints and along the race trail that are so passionate about making sure all the dogs are very well taken care of. So, you know, I've been mushing since 1994, and I have never seen any type of – I'm sure it may happen on a rare occasion, but I have never seen any type of abuse that ever happens to a sled dog, particularly in a race, because if you do, you're blacklisted and you'll probably never race again. They take it very seriously, and I think that sled dogs are a sport that everybody wants to see successful, but many people just don't know what it's all about, so they form negative opinions.
Well, I will say, I've known some mushers in my day, and when you're in a race, when you get to a checkpoint or a rest stop or something like that, the dogs eat. The dogs are checked individually, every inch of them, to make sure that they don't have any sore paws or muscles, or they get massages, they're fed, they're fresh straw and bedded down and that kind of thing, before the musher ever even thinks about taking care of themselves, eating themselves or sleeping themselves. The dogs come first.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
That's great. I mean, I think it's a perfect time of year. I mean, we're going to be excited about these races coming up and, you know, doing a lot of coverage and posting a lot of photos and sharing it. And I think it's just really good that folks hear it from, you know, both of you, because you're so experienced in this field, about just how happy the dogs are in the sport and how safe and these great precautions that are taken. So thank you to both of you for that. Brad, you were recently featured on Pet Pals TV. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience and the message that you hope people receive?
Well, it was basically, they're very, very nice folks at Pet Pals TV, and one of their things is know your breed. If you're going to get a dog, whether you know, from a rescue, hopefully, or whatever the case may be, you have to understand the breed. Every breed of dog is different, and every person is not cut out to be a Siberian Husky or an Alaskan Malamute owner. They might be great with a beagle or a poodle or whatever the case may be. But some people are really cut out to be Husky or Malamute owners. And because of my experience with the breed, they asked me to be on to kind of teach people about the Siberian Huskies, the pros and cons. Yes, they're very energetic. If you don't live a relatively active lifestyle and give them a lot of exercise, that super intelligence we talked about earlier can turn into boredom if they don't get enough exercise in there. They'll find things to get into and mischief to cause and create. So it was more about educating people about the breed and about rescue and how important it is if you're looking for a dog and you want a nice pet, how many dogs there are out there that are really deserving of a good home and a loving home, and they've got all kinds of love to give.
It's funny because I was laughing when you were talking about them being bored because, as we said before, Gibson's been rehabbing from an injury. So he's always been our big outside guy, loves laying out in snow, loves being outdoors, loves going for walks, and he's pretty much on a waterbed. And I have him under the kitchen window with it open so he gets to feel, you know, the air. And it's parked in front of my bookshelves. And I posted some photos on and off over the week about, you know, Gibson versus my cookbooks because it's my cookbook shelf and it's Florida ceiling, but he can reach two shelves. And nightly, because I can tell when he's starting to feel better now from rehabbing, because I'll hear the thump, and I go out there, and sure enough, Gibson's got another cookbook. So right now, he has cleared off half of the bottom shelf so he can lay his head in it. And I'm actually going to be posting another photo of him because he was with yet another one, a dessert cookbook, in his paws. And, you know, of course, he's starting to nibble on him, and he's not really our chewer, but he's bored. I mean, he fell Christmas Eve, so he's been rehabbing since. And he still has another 2 months of, you know, where I have to still stay on top of keeping him you know, still for the most part. You know, he is starting to push himself up to walk very gingerly on his own. But, you know, he's bored because Mom makes him stay on his waterbed. So the cookbooks are there.
And so that's really tough. When you're talking about Siberian Huskies, if they have an injury of that kind of thing, or if they have surgery or something where the vet says, now keep them quiet, keep them calm, not a lot of activity, bouncing around. With a Husky, that's really, really tough to do because they want to get up and move around. They are very energetic, and then you run the risk of like, okay, Mom won't let me get up and play or bounce around or chase around the backyard, so what else can I get into? You know, because I kid people when I talk to them. A lot of times people will ask me, well, what do I do about this or what do I do about that? And I say, well, look, Dr. Brad will help you. I have a prescription that will cure that problem 99% of the time. And they go, really? What do I give them? More exercise.
yep. Or cookbooks.
Yeah, or cookbooks.
Just very briefly, I know we talk a lot about Huskies, but what are some of the things about Alaskan Malamutes that are good for someone to know about if they're thinking about, you know, adopting a Malamute? Because they, too, are absolutely stunning dogs. And, you know, I think that they're part of the same, you know, thing that happens with Huskies. People fall in love with them, and they're just so fuzzy and beautiful. You know, but can you talk a little bit about a Malamute and maybe preparing a house for one of them as well? Is it similar to a Husky, or are there some other things that people need to be aware of?
It's similar in some ways. They, again, are a working dog like a Husky, and they're going to require some exercise, and they're also pretty intelligent, and they can get into things if they don't get enough exercise and work off some of that energy and that type of thing. Their personality and temperament's a little bit different. They tend to be a little bit more aloof, but they also, you know, on a positive side, they can be a little bit more agreeable. They're not quite as independent as Huskies as far as we're going to do whatever I want to do. So they're different, even though they look quite a bit alike other than their size. Malamutes are considerably larger typically than Huskies. They're really not that closely related. Huskies came from northeastern Asia in Siberia, and Alaskan Malamutes were developed in North America in Alaska and in that area. So even though they look a lot alike, they do have similar traits in some things, but their personalities are a little different. The Malamutes can be a little bit more aloof. They're not quite as, crazy. People talk about Huskies being kind of silly and crazy because they tend to be even a little more high energy. And Malamutes can be, you know, a benefit is they are a lot of times a little more agreeable to obeying commands and that kind of thing, but similar, yes, in some ways, but not all.
Now, I know, you know, we're going to have to wrap up in a little bit, and I still had a few more things I wanted to ask you, but I did want to mention, everyone, that foster families and donations are always critical to every rescue. If you visit the Northern Lights Sled Dog Rescue website, you know, there are ways that you can sign up to be a foster parent or to donate to the rescue. And let me ask you quickly, Brad, are there other ways of helping? Can people conduct a fundraiser? Do you accept volunteers to help walk the dogs? Or I know you have the rescue calendars. Do you need help on what are some great ways that if people were interested, like they can't, you know, maybe bring a dog into their home, but what other ways, if they were interested in volunteering, could they do?
Well, yeah, we have, like I said, a really great network of volunteers who are very, very dedicated. And a lot of what they do is visiting the dogs. The dogs, you know, huskies, they love people. And mm-hmm. they love the attention and to be around people and stuff. And it could be as simple as visiting the kennel every now and then and just walking some of the dogs, playing with them. During the spring and fall, your huskies have probably never shed before, right?
Oh, no. Nope. And funny you should say that, because I'm rehabbing, Wolf is just getting better from his surgery, Gibbs rehabbing, and as I said, Harley, you know, because of the weather, we're doing some protective work, preventative work on her from her injury. They're already starting to blow their coats, which is crazy. But I can see the difference of keeping them in versus having them, you know, because we have a deck that's enclosed for them and everything. You know, it's kind of club husky here, but I keep them more in right now because of the bed rest, and it's amazing. They're already shedding.
Right. Well, like I said, that's one of the things that our volunteers do. We have semi-regular, what we call brushing parties. And what it is just an opportunity where we schedule a time for 3 or 4 hours at the kennel or wherever the case may be. Everybody comes in and brushes the dogs and plays with them.
What a great idea.
Time. And it's an awesome time for all the volunteers to get together and, you know, gab and talk about their dogs and, you know, all that kind of things. So there's so many different, you know, little things that volunteers can do that really amount to big things when you add them all together. So, yeah, if you're interested in volunteering, we're sure we can find some things that you can help with.
And, again, they can go to your website and just send you an email and get in touch with you and say, hey, I'm interested. You know, I just want to say that, you know, I believe we have an epidemic of dogs who are homeless and abused across the breeds. The number just within the two breeds of Siberian Huskies and Malamutes alone that wind up homeless, abused, abandoned, dropped off at shelters, that are on death row, I mean, to me it's staggering. I know as many of us know, these dogs are beautiful puppies, and, you know, people just fall in love with them without doing their homework on the needs of the breed. You know, for example, just some things, daily, sometimes several times daily exercise, excuse me, training, howling, shedding a lot, as we just were talking about, extreme playfulness, ability to climb up and dig out of almost anything, be an avid escape artist, the need to run. And then there are those who have special needs. So after the, oh my gosh, he's beautiful, I want him, wears off, the dog inevitably winds up dumped or abandoned. And so many of the issues, the large number of dogs like the Siberian Husky, they wind up homeless, is due to families changing their mind after the adorable puppy phase wears off and the Husky becomes active, doing active Husky and, you know, young dog things, but sometimes a little amped up to an extreme. But, you know, Brad, I know you and your other volunteers at Northern Lights do much education on the breed and try to help families keep their huskies. Can you share some of the tools and helpful information that can really assist families in keeping their huskies and northern breed dogs, other than to encourage and educate people that if they can't tend to the needs of the breed, then they really should not get a husky or a Malamute in the first place, so that abandonment won't occur?
Well, right. We have, to start with, we have a what we call a primer, a Northern Breed primer, and it's basically a several-page document that covers a lot of the pros and cons of Siberian Huskies and Malamutes as far as, look, be prepared, there's going to be some shedding. Understand that the dog's going to require quite a bit of exercise. Understand that this is not the kind of dog you can just go out for a walk for with no leash mm-hmm. and that type of thing. They're going to have to be on a leash. And we provide that to prospective adopters and stuff like that. And, you know, that way that gives them some of the background. we've even done some, you know, I had a friend that did a video for me to explain a little bit about huskies and stuff. And also, like I said before, the adoption, when we have a dog adopted, it doesn't end there. If you ever have any questions, if you ever are get a little bit frustrated because your dog's not doing what you expect or what you were hoping it would be, contact us. We're there forever. When you adopt a dog from us, it doesn't end with the adoption and you walk out the door and it's, you know, it's all your problem. If you have any problems or any questions, our adoptions coordinator, Dawn, is wonderful to help people to any length. Suggestions, whether it be medication or more exercise or training tips or whatever, we have this whole family of people who are willing to help.
Yeah, the support is there, and that's wonderful. You know, and that's really great because I think that is just what makes it so successful. I don't know if anybody can hear, but my dogs are actually serenading us in the background.
I thought I heard a little chorus in the background.
Yeah, that's my little Siberian chorus. As the motto of Northern Lights says, it's keep it, you know, keep it about the dogs. And we're so thankful to have wonderful people such as yourself, Brad, and the other volunteers at Northern Lights and rescuers all over who dedicate their lives to helping dogs in need. Brad, thank you so much for being on our show today. And really, once again, congratulations on Northern Lights Sled Dog Rescue's 10th anniversary. That's really commendable.
Well, thank you very, very much for having me. Always enjoy an opportunity to talk about my favorite breeds of dogs, and it was just wonderful.
Thanks so much. And Robert, do you have anything you want to add before we sign off?
No, thank you very much, Brad, for joining us today, and I look forward to seeing what you have to say about the Iditarod coming up on your page in the next couple of weeks.
I've already got my tracker fired up so that I can track the teams and that kind of thing. And is my last line. I want to wish everyone involved in the Iditarod a safe and successful and speedy trip. And I hope for 10 to 15 below zero and fresh snow all the way.
That's right. We'll do a snow dance for you guys, you know. But I'm with Brad. I hope everyone has a really great, you know, a great run and a safe run. And lots of luck to Nicole and her junior Iditarod.
Well, thank you very much, guys. We are out of time. Thank you very much for joining us today. And we will be back on the air next month for our next edition of the Sci Vibe. We'll talk to you guys soon. Goodbye.